March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. Let me tell you guys that coming up in exactly 1 hour, Josh Vernier, Michael Massey, Kyle Isbell, they are doing a Q&A inside the sports book at Hollywood Casino. So if you're over the age of 21, it's free. It's open to the public. Go up there. Vern's going to ask some questions. When it's over, Michael Massey's going to shake some people's hand. Kyle Isbell's going to shake some people's hand. They'll sign some stuff. They'll take some pictures. It'll be great. It's free and open to the public. I want you to keep in mind it is a casino, so you got to be 21 or over. You guys have been to a casino before. Usually not a lot of kids running around the casino. Just want you to keep that in mind. But if you got some free time tonight and you want to head out there, I will be out there. Rob will be out there. Everybody from the station will be out there. Michael Massey, Josh Vernier, and Kyle Isbell. They will all be inside the sports book at Hollywood Casino coming up in about an hour or so. All right. This is how I would like to start this 5 o'clock hour. We're going to talk a little bit of basketball, a little bit of baseball, a little bit of Royals, a little bit of everything, right? So let's start here. Yesterday was a really, really fun game to be at. Now, they didn't win. It didn't end how you wanted it to end. But I do think, in the same way, Rob, you were making the point earlier about Mizzou, I think deep down, Missouri is a basketball school. And the moment that the basketball team shows anything to get excited about, people come back. And it brings back all these feelings. I think deep down, Kansas City loves baseball. And I understand that the Chiefs have taken off and the Chiefs have become the greatest dynasty that we had ever seen. For those of you that were at the first championship parade back in 2015, and you've been to the Chiefs one, it has not been close from the first Royals one and the other Chiefs one. It was just different. For those of us that lived in Kansas City in 14 and 15 and have also lived here when the Chiefs have gone on a Super Bowl run, you also understand that it's different, that deep down, we all love the Royals. And yesterday, I thought, was a great celebration of that. It was very Kansas City. They had the flag. They had a flyover. Willie Wilson was there. Lorenzo Cain was there. They wore the powder blue jerseys. The Royals had a disappointing loss on opening day. Like, you can't get much more Kansas City than what you had out at Kauffman Stadium yesterday. It really, really was a good game to be at. I gave you guys the stat earlier. Now, this stat, if you hadn't heard it, I would maybe turn the radio down a little bit. In the last 15 games that the Royals have had, where they have had at least 28,000 people in attendance, they are 3-12 in those games. 3-12 in the last 15 games. They have lost 9 games in a row in which the crowd has had more than 28,000 people out there yesterday. You can feel it. People want to be excited about this baseball team. People want reasons to go buy the KC hat. People want reasons to buy a new baseball jersey. People want a reason to get excited about this baseball team. I'm not telling you that you shouldn't be excited about this team. In fact, I'm telling you that you still should. But what I noticed yesterday, and my biggest takeaway from the game is, I think the Royals gave you their why. They gave you the why in a positive sense. They also gave it to you in a negative sense. If you think the Royals can make the postseason, which I think they can, if you think they can make the postseason, I think they showed you why. Yesterday, they scored a run because of Bobby Witt Jr.'s speed. He beat out an infield single. There's not a lot of players in baseball that get an infield single on that play. He's one of the fastest. That extended the inning. It allowed Vinny Pasquantino to come up and then subsequently hit a home run that made it 3-0. You feel good about it. They scored runs because of the speed of Bobby Witt Jr., and they have one of the best developing young power hitters in Major League Baseball. It gave them the 3-0 lead. Everybody was feeling good. Why did the Royals lose yesterday? Well, they lost it because their two biggest question marks shine through. The Royals' two biggest question marks heading into this season are the outfield, the bullpen. Their outfield let them down yesterday. I don't know what Hunter Renfroe was doing yesterday. He misplayed a ball off of right field. He had two opportunities to potentially throw somebody out at home plate. He was not close on either of those throws. He had a chance to make another play for a ball that was hit into the gap. He missed the ball on that one. Like, he made at least four defensive mistakes or miscues out there for the Royals. He's not a good enough bat to do that. And for a guy who is on a two-year, $13 million deal and is halfway through that deal, I don't think that he is going to get the leash that some other players would potentially get. So that was number one. They also had an inexplicable base running error. You cannot have that happen. It is the eighth inning. It is a runner on first and third with no outs, and you need one run. You don't need to put up a five-run inning. You got to figure out, at a minimum, a way to scratch one run across. If the Royals score in that eighth inning, in my opinion, they win the baseball game. Well, that's not what happened. Their runner on first and third with no outs turned to a runner on first with two outs in a very, very short amount of time. Listen to this.
In comes the 2-2 pitch. Ground ball third. Runner's going to try to score. The runner at third, Blanco's, caught in a rundown. And now they are able to tag him out. Now the runner to second is caught between second and third. And racing back towards second out there. And then they tag the runner who came back from first base. And the Royals really botched that.
That was Denny Matthews yesterday. Botched. The Royals are simply not talented enough to make the amount of mistakes that they made yesterday and can still expect to beat a good team like the Cleveland Guardians are. They're a team that won their division last year. That's a good baseball team. And if you're going to give up the amount of base runners that the Royals did yesterday, if you're going to make the amount of mistakes that the Royals made yesterday, you are simply not beating a team the caliber of the Cleveland Guardians. And yesterday, if you are looking at this team as who needs to play well for them to make the postseason, they just didn't get a good enough contribution from those guys. We have Vern on the show earlier. Here he is talking about the big six that the Royals need to rely on for this season.
Well, those two, those are two of the big six, the baseline guys, where it's almost cancel Christmas if Lugo, Waka, Reagans, Bobby, Salvi, or Vinny are not very close to the guy that we saw a season ago. Yeah, okay, yeah, Lugo's season was an anomaly. Fine, Waka's 2024 was his best season in 7 years. It was the best year of Cole Reagan's life. It was one of the eight best years we've ever seen out of any shortstop in baseball history, so that's a lot to ask from Bobby Witt Jr. Now, Salvi's coming up on his 35th birthday. Can he really repeat what he did at the age of 34? You know, to me, Vinny's the guy I'm the most confident in his ability to duplicate what he did in 2024.
The players that the Royals are counting on to generate offense, I mean, some of them played well yesterday. Bobby Witt Jr. got a big hit. Vinny hit a home run yesterday. That was about it. Salvi got a hit late, but didn't drive in a run yesterday. You didn't get much from the outfield. In fact, the outfield, I would argue, was a negative yesterday. The Royals lost yesterday. They lost yesterday. They're going to lose a lot this season. I also think that this team is good enough that I also think they're going to win a lot, too. I think the Royals are winning 87 games this year. I think they're about what they were last year. I think this is the team that is right there on the fringe. A team that could win their division, a team that could and probably should make the postseason, a team that does a lot of things right, but I think has some pretty glaring weaknesses, and those weaknesses potentially stop them from taking the next step. They have question marks in their bullpen. there's not really a guy in their outfit, in their outfield that you really love or trust to be a consistent run producer for you. And if you got that, I think you do have a little bit of a problem. Rob, let me ask you this question and we'll move on and talk a little basketball, and we'll do the read here coming up in a bit. Who are you more frustrated at yesterday? Is it the Kyle Isbell base running error that he had in the eighth inning, or is it Hunter Renfroe? Who are you more upset at from yesterday?
It's Hunter Renfroe, and part of that is the expectation game. Hunter Renfroe was not up to par last year offensively. The Royals are kind of hoping for a bounce back from him, but he's supposed to be a outfield assist, solid defender, and we're hoping the bat comes back this year. He was, what, sixth in the lineup yesterday? That's not where you put your big bopper. I'm not saying he's, you know, Barry Bonds in his prime, but from a six-hole hitter, you expect something at the plate. He gave you nothing. Then in the field, you think, okay, on days he's not going to hit for us, we know we're getting a plus defender. Good arm, handles right field well, can track the ball. He was all those things last year, so you're willing to deal with some offensive deficiencies. He checked none of those boxes yesterday. He did all those things badly, including really bad defensively. Meanwhile, Kyle Isbell, you heard Denny's call. He said it perfectly. Boy, he botched that. Had a big mistake running the bases. I know it. You know it. Q knows it. Kyle Isbell knows it. But you know what? Kyle Isbell's your nine hitter. His job is to play good defense, get a couple of hits, and just be a net neutral throughout the rest of the season. You know what? He had a bunt where he got on base yesterday in that eighth inning, and he also had a double earlier in the game. If you get 1-for-4 with your nine hitter on base twice, you're probably happy as a Royals fan. If you left the ballpark on June 16th and you're like, man, Kyle Isbell got on base twice tonight, including a double, you feel like the Royals are going to win that game more often than they're not. So, yes, the base running blunder was horrific, but he did enough with his bat where I feel like he covered that deficiency. Hunter Renfroe wasn't defending. Hunter Renfroe wasn't hitting. He didn't get on base, so he couldn't base run. So I think part of it's the expectation game. I think I'm more upset with Renfroe after yesterday's opening day.
Text line 913-586-7965. This is something that we were discussing earlier on the show. C-Dot, at this point, I'm willing to call up Jack Caglione, stick him out there with the bat, and say, go to work, kid. Someone else just texted in and said, how quickly do you think that Cags or Gavin Cross gets called up so he can take the place of one of our corner outfielders? We were having this debate earlier, and people were like, oh, well, that's not a good example. They were high school players. I think what is going to hurt Cags in terms of coming up is he just doesn't have a lot of minor league experience. He has played 29 games in the minors, and he is 22 years old. He just turned 22 years old back in February. He doesn't have a whole lot of experience. Now, things change. What I would do with him is I would send him to Northwest Arkansas. I'd send him to Springdale, and I would just see how it goes. I would see how it goes. Now, I don't think he played terribly in A ball, but he didn't hit the cover off the ball. Like, there's things that I think he still needs to work on as a young player, and it's understandable given his age. Now, there are certainly examples of young players that got fast-tracked pretty quickly, and maybe that's how this story ends up. Maybe in 3 weeks, we're talking about him coming up here, and he is Wyatt Langford, who played 47 games down in the minor leagues and got the call up. Maybe he's one of those kind of players. He has 29 games in A-ball. I think we're having the Cags conversation a little bit premature, and I would guess, this is just my hunch, I think he spends a little bit of time down there. I don't think we're talking about years down there. I think if everything goes right this season in AA, I think the Cags has a chance to come up either late in the season as a September call-up or has every opportunity to be on the team at the beginning of next season. He'll be 23 years old. He got a full season down in the minor leagues. He went through the ups. He went through the downs. That's how I think they're going to play it, but I could be wrong. There are certainly examples of some guys who were really good college players as positional players. Not talking about pitchers. We ain't talking about Paul Skeens. It's a completely different business. I think there are those examples. Is he that kind of player? I mean, if you're looking at it, I mean, Wyatt Langford is the example. He did not play a lot of minor league baseball. He played 47 games of minor league baseball, and he was an everyday starter last year for the Texas Rangers and had a pretty good season last year. Is that what Jack Caglione can be? Obviously, we'll see.
I I think part of the Cags thing, and it's a good problem the Royals have, but the phenomenon of Cags was born out of the fact that he had an incredible spring training, which I don't want to discount incredible spring training, but let's take it for a grain of salt. Spring training is spring training. Like, was he tearing the cover off the ball in Arizona against quadruple A pitchers? Maybe. I didn't sit down and track every single one of his at-bats. How many times did he face a pitcher to the quality of Tanner Bibee, who will probably be going on Saturday? How many times did he face, hey, double A reliever who probably won't materialize anything? I don't know, but I know this. A guy who has 29 games of, I believe, low A, mind you, too, of single A baseball is probably not primed and ready for the pros. Now, maybe, like you said, maybe in 30 days, he's shredding double A. And they put him in triple A, and he starts shredding triple A. And the Royals have no choice but to bring him up. And, hey, he's one of those guys. He's the Mike Trout who hit the ground running. He's Ken Griffey Jr. It's possible he's that guy. It's also possible he's Buster Posey, who's a Hall of Fame quality player, but it took a season's worth of minor league baseball before he came up. Maybe he's George Brett, another Hall of Fame player who spent 4 years in minor league baseball. Like, sometimes the stops are part of the norm. Maybe he races past the stops, but I think his great spring training has people accelerating his timeline, and let's just see. And that's the Royals' plan. That's my plan. We should all just woo-saw and see. And if on May 1st, he is smoking the ball down in double A, we can revisit this conversation. But his low A numbers do not look like a guy who, oh, he's on the precipice of greatness in the majors.
And maybe, and just maybe, the Royals don't care about that. Like, looking at Cam Smith, because that was another example that players made, or that the Texters made. He played for the Houston Astros. He played 5 games in double A. He played 5 games in double A and is currently starting for the Houston Astros. He played 32 games in the minor league. He played at Florida State. He was obviously an incredible player at Florida State, and he got completely fast-tracked up here. I mean, you aren't hitting the cover off the ball in 5 games of double A before you get the call-up. So I'm looking at it. He played 15 games in A. He played 12 games in high A, played 5 in double A, and then got the call up to the big league squad. So those organizations completely fast-tracked him. Maybe that's what they do with Cags. I feel like if he was close to coming up, we would kind of know by now, or at least there would be some kind of indication that it is bubbling with him. I don't really think that's the indication that the Royals have given, is that they're close to calling him up. So I certainly understand it, and I certainly think he looks the part, and it will be a big deal eventually when they call him up. I just think that, at least in the short term, so I would say, at least let's say the next 60 days, I don't think that he is a very realistic option. I think they're going to see this Hunter Renfroe thing through. I think they're going to see it through. They gave him 2 years, $13 million. They're halfway done with it. I think that Hunter Renfroe has the smallest leash of anyone that's on the team. They're going to be patient with MJ Melendez. It ain't costing them nothing to be patient with MJ Melendez. They're not completely transforming their outfield. Now, could they call up a young guy and then maybe they make a trade at the deadline? Sure, that's the middle of the summer. We haven't even got to the Masters yet. We haven't finished the NCAA tournament yet. We still got a ways to go before we start talking about making any additions to the team. But I think if you're trying to find an example of what's the best case scenario for Jack Caglione, it's probably Cam Smith. Cam Smith played 32 games in the minor league. Cags is at 29. So he didn't have a lot of experience, and they called him up. He actually had a hit yesterday. He's 22 years old. He's up playing for the Houston Astros, a team with very similar expectations that the Royals have. He got a hit yesterday in his major league debut. He has one hit in his career, so congratulations to him. Cam Smith, I believe they were in the same draft class. He was the 14th overall pick in the 2024 draft. So, yeah, he was. They were in the same draft class. So, shout out to him as he is starting for the Astros. All right, let's talk a little bit of basketball here, Rob. Rob, really quickly hit the music, and let's shout out Baker University.
Your workday is over.
Oh, yeah.
You're headed home, and now you're stuck in traffic. Time to get caught up on the biggest stories in Kansas City and around the country with CDOT and Rob. It's time for The Hits. Number one.
Carrying The Hits are brought to you by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu.
All right. I want to play one piece of audio for you guys. Because there are some things that I would say I am very, very consistent on. Foul up three. Now, some of you would just foul up three. It's like 28 seconds on the clock. No, you don't foul that quickly. But if it's like 7 seconds, yeah, foul. Like you should foul. That's in the best interest of your team. I'm also always going to be on the side in college in use your timeouts to coach your team. And what I saw at the end of the Arkansas-Texas Tech game, it blows my mind. Arkansas had blown a 16-point lead, and if you believe in momentum, they didn't have it. Texas Tech, the better team, started to play like the better team and roared back. They then had the lead in overtime. They score a bucket. When the ball goes through the hoop, it is 7.2 seconds left on the clock. All right, Arkansas has one timeout. Now, what would I do in this situation if I was the coach? We're going to get our point guard and sprint to the half court line. And when you get there, call timeout. We should have this part timed. So we think it takes you about 1.8 seconds, 2 seconds to get to half court. All right, cool. We call timeout. All right, there's 5 seconds left. This is where I work my magic. This is where I call a play, we set a screen, we figure it out, and we're going to get you a good look at the basket to go win this game. Well, that's not what Arkansas did. Arkansas didn't call a timeout. They didn't score. Here is why John Calipari didn't call a timeout.
Consideration to calling a timeout there?
Yeah, but in my career, I let that go. Let the guy get to the rim. They're not going to foul you. You know, they're and with that kind of time, just me. You call a timeout, now you got to worry about what he's doing, how he's playing, the inbound, what are you doing? So I usually let that go. Now, because it ended the way it is, yeah, I wish I would have called a timeout. But 99% of the time, I let that go. Because now I know what they're doing, they know what we're doing. That's why we did it. End of the half, we wanted to go at one guy, and we did. Really, he made a hard bump on DJ that got him kind of off balance on the shot. But, you know, it was what we wanted.
All right, that's John Calipari at the end of the game. It will never make sense to me how, as a coach that makes, Calipari makes, what, $10 million a year? It does not make sense to me that I am going to give my season up to a 19-year-old and let him unilaterally decide what happens. Go back and watch the play. The ball is inbounded to DJ Wagner. He does not pass to anybody else. He and he alone determines how our entire season could potentially end. That's not trust. That's stupid. Why would you do this? I hate the other team gets to call a play too. Well, I think I'm better at this than you are. Simple. I don't care what you draw up. I'm going to draw up a play for my team to go get a basket. Coach your team, control what you can control. Because you know what you can't do if you don't call timeout? You have no control. You're sitting here and you're watching the game on sim. That's not what I want to be doing as the head coach. No. I have spent countless amount of hours watching film and breaking down plays. This is what they pay me the big bucks to go do. To draw up a play to help my team get in position to advance in the NCAA tournament. I don't know how you can justify this as a head coach. The logic makes no sense to me. You want to know how I know DJ Wagner ain't ready for that moment? He was the number one overall recruit, and he's just finished his second year in high school or in college basketball. That's not how it's supposed to work. He ain't that guy. He was 5 of 14 before that shot. Now he was 5 of 15 from the floor. And that's the guy that you rode with at the end of the season? It makes no sense. Arkansas is out of the tournament. One of the better games, certainly one of the better second halves. Arkansas played well. Texas Tech played well. Somebody had to lose. I thought the difference in the end was coaching. I really did. I thought that Texas Tech, I thought they did exactly what they wanted to do in that overtime period. And I don't think that's what happened for the Arkansas Razorbacks. I think that John Calipari put his hands up and just allowed Arkansas to do what they wanted to do at the end of the game. And what you got was a tightly contested step back 20-footer to try to go to a double overtime, I just don't think that's a good play. I don't think that's a good decision. We'll get back to Royals baseball coming up on the other side. Keep it right here, Mr. Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan. We have a Royals roundtable that's coming up in about 30 minutes out at Hollywood Casino. Vern will be there, Michael Massey will be there, Kyle Isbell will be there. They have a Q&A that starts in about 30 minutes, followed by a meet and greet with the players around 6:45. I'm heading out there after the show. Rob is heading out there after the show. Everybody from the station will be out there. It is free. It's open to the public. You got to be 21 or over. It's a casino. Should be a lot of fun at Hollywood Casino. All right, let's talk a little bit of baseball. Let's talk a little bit of basketball. Let's start with basketball as we are, what, probably 30 minutes away from resuming the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament. There were three major questions that I had coming into this NCAA tournament. Those questions have been answered in my mind. I was worried about Duke. I didn't think Duke had been battle tested. I didn't think they had been tournament tested. You look at their conference that they had played in. Like, you didn't play the same kind of schedule that a Houston did or that a Florida or a Tennessee or an Auburn did. You didn't play those teams in the regular season. I was very curious to see what it looked like when Duke got in a fight, when they played a Baylor, when they played in Arizona. That's the best team in the country. Now, the best team in the country doesn't always win the NCAA tournament, but Cooper Flagg has been incredible, and it's been the role players and how they complement their star. Yesterday, it wasn't just Cooper going out there and being amazing. I mean, he was, but it wasn't just him. It was everybody yesterday. It was Knipple. It was James. It was Flagg. It was the other pieces that they have. I thought Duke played one of the more well-rounded and complete games that we have seen so far in this tournament. They have not been challenged halfway through. We're halfway done to a national championship if you're a Duke fan. And in the first three games of this, they were not tested. It was not close between them and their opposition. So Duke advances. I wanted to see how Cooper Flagg was going to handle this tournament. I wanted to see how Duke was going to handle this tournament. Coming from the ACC, I think we have our question of how they're going to handle this thing. That was number one. Let's now move to the SEC. I mean, the SEC was the best conference in the country. And there was an expectation of, all right, we did all this talking in the regular season. Now you got to go prove it. I think they've proven it. Now, I don't know how many teams they're going to get in the Final Four. I don't know if they're going to win the national championship. But all season, I think there were four or five really good teams in the SEC from start to finish. You had your Auburns, your Florida, your Tennessee. You had those premier teams. And they've lived up to the billing so far in the NCAA tournament. They had seven teams make it to the Sweet 16. They were very impressive yesterday in their games. I think the SEC has proven what they needed to prove. If you came in looking for validation for a conference, I think they validated it. Now, again, let's see what happens. I think what this tournament has highlighted is the king stay the king. The teams that have been good in November, December, January on, those are the teams that have been good in this tournament. Nothing has really caught you by surprise. You knew that Arkansas, with John Calipari, they recruited such a level that they were one of the more talented teams. It was just, could they put all that talent together? They did for a weekend. They then ran into a team that's been one of the better teams in college basketball from start to finish. Maybe it's because of NIL. Maybe it's because of the transfer portal. I don't know the exact reason why that it is. But what I'm telling you is this season has shown that the cream rises to the top, and that is exactly what's happened in this NCAA tournament. There's always been 8 to 10 teams that were just better than everybody else. That's how this tournament's looked. That's how this tournament's looked. Florida's been better than everybody else. Alabama's been better than everybody else. Duke has been better than everybody else. That's how this tournament has played itself out. That's how the regular season played itself out.
Let me ask you a question real quick before you get to your third point about the NCAA tournament. Are we a little premature on the SEC celebration? Are we a little quick to say, hey, that was one of our questions and they've answered it? Like, We knew the riffraff of the SEC wasn't going to do anything. The Texas, the Oklahoma, that group. They have had some teams that exceeded expectations in that middle level. I would say Arkansas is a great example of that. Ole Miss, they tip off in about 30 minutes. They take on Mississippi State. They have exceeded their seed. They have played better in the NCAA tournament than they had at any point this season. That's another team. And I'm like, oh, those are boxes to check. But we're not judging Auburn, Alabama, Florida, you know, Tennessee or Kentucky, either one. We're not judging those 1 and 2 seeds by, hey, did you make the Sweet 16? Good job. It shows how good your conference was. That's not the standard that when I was, you know, in town 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, when Kansas kept running through the league and Fran Fraschilla and co. kept telling everyone, well, it's the best league in college basketball. People were like, all right, make a Final Four. And when they didn't, it was, see, the league's not good. I'm not letting people move the goalposts. Does the SEC need to make a Final Four to justify itself? Because I think it's premature to celebrate during Sweet 16 weekend. See, the SEC was king. You know, a lot of mediocre teams historically make the Sweet 16. I think they need a Final Four run.
I understand that. I mean, there is a chance, just based on how the bracket is going to come together, there is a chance that there is an SEC team in every game that's in the Elite Eight. You can't think they're going 0-4, not based on what we've seen this season. So I'm with you that some of this conversation is premature. We don't know how the rest of this weekend is going to play itself out. We had one day. There's 3 more days left in this NCAA weekend, and then we'll get to the Final Four next weekend. But we know Alabama's in it. They're playing Duke. Auburn, they play Michigan. You got Ole Miss playing in their game. They play against Michigan State. So you got a chance to get 2 SEC teams into that regional final. Florida has advanced to the region, and now Kentucky plays Tennessee, so we know there's going to be at least one other SEC team. We have a chance that there is going to be an SEC team in all 4 of the games on Saturday and Sunday. They ain't going 0-4. So they're going to get at least one. Now, the question is, do they get 2? Do they get 3? Let's see how this potentially plays itself out. But I guess maybe I am projecting a little bit. I think the SEC has proven that they were good. They've proven that their top 5 were in the conversations of the best team in the country. This conversation with the SEC was never about how good you thought Missouri was or Texas or Mississippi State. It was how good do you think Florida is? How good do you think Auburn is? How good do you think Alabama is? And I think they have proven that those teams are very good. The last thing is about St. John's, about your team.
Don't call St. John's my team.
St. John's was your team.
No.
St. John's was your team. You kept telling me they weren't good, they can't shoot, and you ended up being right. Those have been the stories. The big shocker was that all of the good teams advanced in one weekend, except the one you'd been telling me about this whole time. Hey, I'm not sure how good they are. It's been about one conference. It's been about one player. That's what it's been about. And those 3 things, I think we have all of those questions answered at this point of the NCAA season. So I'm excited for today's game. I'm excited for this weekend. I mean, Duke and Alabama is a high level basketball game. It really is. It is a high level game. I was joking yesterday on Twitter about this. For those of you that don't like the NBA, Alabama plays how NBA teams play. They guess, well, we're going to take a bunch of threes. They took 41 threes yesterday and like 55 shots. We're going to take a bunch of threes. We know we're going to miss some, but we think that we can make 4 or 5 out of 10 every single time. And in order for you to keep up with that, you need to shoot at that pace, or you got to make a bunch of 2-pointers because the math isn't in your favor. That's what they did yesterday to BYU. It was a math game. We're going to take a majority of these threes. And when we're hot like they were yesterday, you can't keep up with this. So, yes, we'll let you score 80 points in this game because we're going to score 111 against you, and we're going to beat you by 30 simply because we shot you out of the gym. That's what happened yesterday between them. You're also looking at it. You have all 4 of the top seeds have advanced in the Midwest region. Houston plays Purdue, the 1 versus the 4. You got the 3 and 2, Kentucky and Tennessee, 2 teams that know each other very well. I think we are looking at the next couple of days, these next 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We're looking at some really, really strong college basketball. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
Hey, it's Lucas Ersig from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Do you guys remember a couple of weeks ago we talked about how Hooters – was filing for bankruptcy. And I blamed a lot of you for letting go of an American institution. There are some ideas that you would assume never die. There are some ideas that you think live on forever. I don't care how evolved we think we are as a society. You know what we all love to see? Two people fight. Boxing will never die. The UFC will never go away. We like watching people fight. You would think a place that combines so many amazing things wouldn't be going through some of the financial issues that they're having. But here we are with an American staple, Hooters. This is their CEO. Quote, "We need to go through a re-Hooterization and we need to make this restaurant more family friendly. They are attempting to overhaul its image and they want to become much more of a PG rebrand." Quote, "You go to some parts of the country and people say, oh, I could never go to Hooters. My wife would kill me. That's depressing to us. We want to change that." All right. Now, I don't want to speak out of turn. I also don't want to sound crass, but I want to have a real conversation about this. Your food ain't good enough to then try to be more like the other restaurants then. If you're now trying to be more like Chili's or Applebee's, then why am I coming here? Part of why you go is for the things that you maybe can't tell your wife about. That's what makes it Hooters. So instead of leaning more into what you are, you now want to become the rebranded, sanitized version of it? I'm not going for that. Rob, they also want to have fresher ingredients and provide faster service is what they would like to do. It sounds to me like you guys just want it to be like Chili's. You want Hooters to turn into TGI Fridays. And sure, that's fine. That's not what we want it to be. You got to serve your base here. You go to Twin Peaks. It's obvious what they're selling. Have you been to that? What's that place called? The Twisted Kilt or the Tilted? You know the place I'm talking about. You've heard of it before. You know what you get when you go in there. I don't know what kind. Well, I don't know what I can expect.
Did the owner say a Hooterization? Is that a word?
He used the term. That's what he did.
So I want to make sure I heard that correctly. He said we need a rebrand and a Hooterization. Hooterization to go more PG?
That's what he said.
I don't know what a Hooterization is, but if you polled me before this segment, I would not have bet that's a PG term.
No, that's what he said. I actually have to take a little bit of a detour because I told this. This is actually a really good segue. I told this dad that I would shout out his son.
I'm sure he's so happy.
I want to shout out Dawson. Happy birthday to Dawson. A really good segue from what we were talking about. And Dawson, if I was you, if you get two hits in your baseball game, you know what I would have your dad take you to? Hooters today. Change your life. That's what I want you to do. I want you to go 2-for-4 today with two doubles. And then afterwards, you know what I say? Hey, Pops, can we go bust down a 12-piece wing? Yeah. Son, you know what? I know just the place to take you. An American staple. I want you to see what hard work looks like. You know, that's what we're trying to teach you in this home. Hard work.
Best way to celebrate the Hooterization of the restaurant.
That's what he said. Yeah, that's what he said. He said they're going through the re-Hooterization. That's what he said.
By the way, if they want to really fix the problem, it's not the branding or the imaging or you can't go with your wife. It's your food's mid. If we're going to be honest about it, let's be honest about it.
I like their food. I can't lie to you.
Twin Peaks runs laps around their food.
I like their food. I like Hooters.
TGI Fridays looks down at Hooters food.
Well, I don't disagree there. I don't disagree. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. I am sad that Hooters could be potentially. I liked the one that was on Berry Road. I used to stop there sometimes, get me a little 8-piece, watch the game, but I don't have that option anymore.
I mean, how will you get by without microwaved wings?
Now, if I want wings, I just go to Wingstop. Wingstop is taking over. Let's go to Wingstop. Get mine to go.
Do you eat inside Wingstop? You gotta get them to go. That's my one Wingstop negative. I like Wingstop, but I can never just like pop in and chill there.
I don't eat there very often. I normally just get it to go, and then I just go home, and then I watch. I watch the game I was gonna watch. I haven't been to Buffalo Wild Wings in forever. When was the last time you've been to Buffalo Wild Wings?
I went to Buffalo Wild Wings for one of the college football playoff games, actually.
Mm.
I had some out-of-town people. It was like around Christmas time, so we had out-of-town family in. Just,
you couldn't take them to the other place?
It's a 9-person group text. I'm not getting into a fight. Just fine. Buffalo Wild Wings.
Wow, that's crazy. All the love they've shown us here, and you couldn't go to the other place? And you chose to go to another place? That's crazy.
I'll tell you this. The other place is better than the place I went.
No question. No question. I can't believe you would do that.
Also, the place I went had QR code menus. So I was already in a bad mood when I showed up.
Yeah, everybody hates the QR code menu.
And just the waitress walks by, point at the thing, just scan it. No.
What games do we have tonight in the NCAA tournament? Let me pull the
scores. We got Michigan State, Ole Miss in about 10 minutes.
Who you got winning that one?
I got Michigan State. We got Kentucky, Tennessee. I don't know how to feel about that game, but...
Hate, probably. I know. You don't want to see the SEC flourish.
I'd love to see an under in that game. Love a nice under.
We got Michigan and Auburn, and we got Purdue of Houston. So, what, three of the four games tonight have a team in the SEC. One game is a conference game, basically. Kentucky-Tennessee. This is the third time they played each other this year. So, it just... You know what? It just means more. That's maybe the best way to put it. It just means more. I had a lot of fun today. Hopefully you guys had a lot of fun today. I had a great week. Hopefully you had a great week. And we'll catch up with you on Monday. Denny Matthews will be on the show on Monday.
Rose Day game on Monday, my guy.
What time they play?
They play at 1.
Oh, so never mind. Denny will be on the show Tuesday. Take care of yourself. We'll let Daniel Craig take you off.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.